Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll speak to one of the few remaining Tuskegee Airmen, and we'll get the latest on the deployment of airmen from the 934th Airlift Ring. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Red Tails, brought to the silver screen by George Lucas, had a stellar opening weekend at the box office. The movie tells a story about a group of African-American servicemen during World War II. They were the 332nd Fighter Group of the U.S. Army Air Corps. Many knew them as the Tuskegee Airmen, named for the city in Alabama where they trained, and even more remember them as the Red Tails, because the pilots painted the tails of their P-51 Mustangs red. The launch of this historic movie is an appropriate celebration of Black History Month. It allows us a glimpse into a world where men were revered in the air for their skill, but treated without respect on the ground because of the color of their skin. Every year during Black History Month, we reflect on the invaluable contributions that the African American community has made to the culture and history of our nation. This month, I encourage you to celebrate it and reflect on the contributions of African Americans who serve or have served our nation in uniform.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining us now from the Air Force Reserve is Colonel Darrell Young, the commander of the 934th Airlift Wing. Colonel, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me back.
Colonel, for those folks that may not have listened to us when you were on a few months ago, could you tell us a little bit about the 934th out at the Twin Cities Airport?
The 934th Airlift Wing, we're out there, like you said, out by the airport. We're a combat airlift wing. We fly the C-130H3 aircraft. Main mission is airdrop and carrying supplies and folks around the war zone and taking that stuff to the front and supporting the Army and the Marines and that are carrying on the fight. And it's a great mission.
And, Colonel, we've talked about this before as well, but a lot of folks don't understand the difference between the reserves and the Guard and the mission of the reserves and the Guard. Could you just walk us through that quickly?
Right. My guard brothers across the ramp, they are a state entity. They work for the governor of Minnesota and provide great support to the great state of Minnesota. Whereas the Air Force Reserve, we're a federal entity. We're known as the Title 10 guys under the U.S. Code, and we work for the President of the United States through the Air Force. So now, having said that, both myself and the Guard, in times of emergency, we can come in and help in disaster relief statewide if called upon. And at the same time, our Guard brothers, they deploy and do the wartime mission of the federal government when they're called upon to do that. But typically, we stay federal or state.
And Colonel, as you mentioned, you fly the C-130 cargo aircraft. What type of missions do you go on, and how do you use those aircraft for federal and or state missions?
Well, like I said, it's the C-130 aircraft is an incredible aircraft with an incredible history. I always say that it's definitely already earned its place in the Hall of Fame. It's a great airplane. It's been flying since the early 50s. Its main mission is tactical airlift, and what we mean by that is right there at the front, like I said, bringing supplies, and, you know, we call it beans and bullets for the troops, and keeping them fed, keeping them supplied, and we also do airdrop. Currently right now, operations in Afghanistan, we're able to airdrop supplies to troops that are up in the mountains that typically, you know, you can't get to unless you do that. So main mission is, supporting those frontline troops.
And Colonel, I was reading an article earlier this week that was talking about these airdrops from C-130s And I'm assuming that in the last 10 years we've gotten better at that, but there's more technology available today, and you can pinpoint airdrop now like we've never seen before, can't you?
Oh, yeah, right. It's incredible what technology has done. You know, that same that GPS that you have in your car, we're now using that to put cargo on the spot within a foot of where we want to put it. And basically, we're able to control that pallet and get it guided to an exact point. And the reason I say it, especially it's critical in Afghanistan, like I talked about, a lot of those folks are on hillsides, mountainsides, and the difference, the distance between them and the enemy is maybe, you know, it's measured in yards. And to be able to put that cargo, that airdrop piece of equipment right next to them with precision is pretty incredible.
Colonel, did I read correctly that some of these, it's not just the parachute, but some of them you can, after you've dropped it, you can direct the parachute to a specific location?
Right, right. That's exactly, yeah, exactly it. You basically fly that parachute down to that exact spot, so via GPS. It's incredible technology.
It's great stuff. And Colonel, a little more on the 934th. We told us that you have eight H3-130 cargo aircraft. How many personnel, how many folks under your command there, sir?
I've got about 1,400 folks. The bulk of that is your typical reservist who's got a job in the community and comes out and drills on the weekend and supports us that way. We've got some full-timers. We've got, like I said, we've got a squadron of C-130 H-3s. We've also got an aerial evacuation squadron, the folks who take care of the wounded warriors as we bring them out of the war zone. And we've got, all different types of support functions. So we've got a pretty diverse crowd out there.
We're speaking with Colonel Darrell Young, the commander of the 934th Airlift Wing of the Air Force Reserve in Minneapolis-St. Paul on Minnesota Military Radio, right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Colonel, the last 10 years, we've talked about this a little before, too. There's been repeated deployments. And in this marketplace, we hear about the Minnesota National Guard sending people out in large numbers, but you've had a number of deployments as well.
Oh, right. We've been deploying, you said in the last 10 years, we have been on a constant deployment schedule for that last period of time. We are constantly getting folks ready, sending them out. We've got I've got people scattered all over the world, not just in the where everybody thinks we're at, Afghanistan and that kind of thing. We've got people working stateside. We've got people working all over the world, and they're constantly going. I have folks that have had they're probably on their fourth or fifth deployment.
And Colonel, we're going to get into this. You had a big deployment recently, but you've got some people that go out in one and twos, and you've got units that go out as well, right?
Right. We're a little bit different than the Army National Guard. Typically, the Army, the way they deploy, they deploy by battalion size, a lot of folks going to one location. Whereas the reserves, the Air Force, we're more, we call it onesie-twosies. A lot of times we'll just get a requirement for maybe one intel officer to go, somewhere to do his job, and we'll send that person out. But at the same time, like you mentioned just recently, we've sent out half of our airlift fleet to the AOR, and that was about 150 folks, both air crew and maintainers to keep those airplanes flying. So that was a big deployment, but like I said, typically we send out small pieces out all the time.
So, Colonel, you've just recently sent half your aircraft and 150 airmen out on a deployment. Is this? Can you tell me how long that is and generally where they went?
Well, it's out in Southwest Asia. It's about the deployment is for most folks is about 6 months, and I say that because we have some folks that'll go out for half of that, and then we'll have somebody who will go out and backfill them. They kind of split the deployment, so we have, like I said, some folks going for 6 months, some folks going for three and rotating out. So, pretty big effort.
And Colonel, I'm curious when you have the need to deploy four aircraft and some crew. Do you look for volunteers first, or do you pick who you need? How does it work within your reservists?
Well, definitely. We first have to look at what the mission requirement is and what type of people we need to send, and then we go to our folks and say, hey, who wants to volunteer? And that's typically our main thrust is to get volunteers first. And then what I've seen and what I've just been continually amazed at is our people volunteering. Like I said, we don't have any problems filling the requirements. Most people step up, volunteer, and it's a pretty easy process. And I'm pretty amazed that they're still willing to step up and do that time after time.
And you're at full force with your reservists?
Oh yeah, we're fully manned, and my recruiters, we're turning away folks. I mean, seriously, my recruiters are working hard, and I think it's kind of a testament to the generation that the young folks that are coming out of high school and college now, they really want to serve, and our recruiting, we're reaching our goals, and we're doing great.
Colonel, we have to take a short break. When I come back, I'd like to talk about what it takes to get ready for a big deployment and some of the things you go through in terms of training and getting prepared for your airmen to go away for 6 months. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. We're speaking with Colonel Darrell Young, from the commander of the 934th Airlift Wing on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and today we're talking to Colonel Darrell Young, the commander of the 934th Airlift Wing from the Air Force Reserve out at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Air Reserve Station. Colonel, a lot of times folks don't quite understand, but an organization such as the 934th Airlift Wing has a major economic impact on the Twin Cities, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. We have a very big impact, we think. You look at a lot of what we do, a lot of the support that we give to the local community and to the nation. We're constantly updating facilities and modernizing and that kind of thing, and that brings jobs to the local community and just the folks that are employed out at the base. They earn a living out there, and they spend that in the local community, and we do have an impact. Talking to my budget guys, they tell me we have about a $126 million impact a year on the local community. So I think that's pretty significant.
And beyond that, sir, this isn't like an active duty base that would be located near the Twin Cities. These are our friends and neighbors and relatives that have a part-time job with the Air Force Reserve.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's been a lot of talk recently about, the military and their relationship with the communities they serve and where they're at. And I think they're talking mostly about active duty folks, the folks who come someplace and spend a few years and move on. I think the strength of the reserve program is we are a part of Minnesota. Most of the folks that work out at the base, they were born and raised here and went to school here, and they are very much involved in the local community. A lot of the folks that work out at the base are movers and shakers in their civilian job that have a great impact on the local community. So yeah, it's a pretty incredible group of people.
Colonel, before the break, we were talking about your recent deployment to Southwest Asia of 4 aircraft and 150 airmen. What's the kind of timeline on that? How long beforehand do you know you're going to have a deployment? How do you gear up for it? How do you prepare and train for it?
Oh, that's a big undertaking. We typically know about a year out that we're going to deploy. And again, we get the requirement from the Air Force, say, hey, this is what we need. This is how many folks. This is how many airplane. And then we go about filling that, and we go about training our folks up and getting them ready. There's a number of tasks and training duties they have to do before they qualify to deploy. Typically, and the strength of the Air Force Reserve is we're always ready to go do our wartime mission. Tomorrow, if we get called, we're ready to go. But when you do one of these deployments, there are some things that you typically don't train with every year that you have to spin up and do. So it's an undertaking to get folks trained and ready to go. And the other part of that, the personal side of that, is getting the families ready too, getting them to understand that their loved one's going to be along, be away for a while, and now. One of my primary jobs is to make sure those families are taken care of when those folks deploy. So we've got a great organization out at the base. It's called our Airmen and Family Readiness Center, and that's their job. They're there to help the families and the friends of the folks that are deploying to make sure we're taking care of them. As you well know, Tom, deploying is very stressful. It's stressful on the individual going. It's also very stressful on the families. So if we can take care of the families and reassure the individual that we're going to take care of those families, it's a lot less stressful for them to go out and support what we're doing. So,
We're speaking to Colonel Darrell Young, commander of the 934th Airlift Wing on Minnesota Military Radio right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Colonel, as you said years ago when I was in Vietnam, if there was problems back home, we'd find out about it 6 weeks later by Red Cross and Pony Express.
Right.
But in today's world, technology is such that when your airmen are out on a deployment, they know what's going back home right now, don't they?
Oh, yeah, they sure do. Again, technology. Everybody's got Facebook. Everybody's got Twitter. A lot of the families stay in touch via email. We've set it up for this deployment. We're going to keep it going. We've set up some resources that families can, like you said, stay in touch almost instantaneously and see what their loved one's doing. And it is pretty incredible. Like you said, I remember when my dad went to Vietnam, he was allowed, maybe a call a week back home, and it was a scratchy long distance line. And, we got to talk to him for a couple minutes. But nowadays, you're right. We're staying in touch with those folks all the time. It's kind of neat.
And part of your job as commander of the 934th, I'm sure, is to make sure that the families are taken care of when your airmen are gone, and you have the Airmen and Family Readiness Center personnel to help you. Can you give us an example? How do they react with the families?
Right. Like I said before, they're there to take care of the family, to give them the support they need. If we have a spouse who, has an emergency, small emergency or great emergency, they know that they can call our airman, a family readiness person. And if they can't take care of the situation right then, we tap into the local resources and we get them the help they need. Around the base, we have so many incredible resources to draw upon, and really is kind of a neat thing we're doing for the families.
And this generation of Americans is really trying to help support the troops and their families, aren't they?
Oh yeah, it's been incredible. I when people ask me, hey, what can we do? How can we help? Sometimes I kind of go, well, just showing your support, coming out, and waving the flag or whatever, but when it comes down to what I really need or what the families really need, like I said, there's so many organizations out that are helping us out, and it's just incredible.
Colonel, we've just got about a minute left, but what kind of message would you give our listeners today if they were thinking about joining the United States Air Force Reserve?
Oh, well, definitely come out and join. Like I said, a lot of the young folks I talk to that are joining today, you think about the economy and you think about, hey, are they out here looking for a job? And that's really not the case. They just want to serve. They're very smart people. They're college students. There's folks that they've got their career on track, but they also want to take time and serve their country. And those are the kids that make our organization great. So if you're looking for a challenge, you're looking for an adventure, come out and see us.
And Colonel, where can the listeners find out more about supporting the military in the 934th?
Give us a call or contact Airman Family Readiness, contact our public affairs office, and they can answer any questions that the folks have.
Colonel, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks again, Tom.
Thank you,
I appreciate
sir.
It.
That was Colonel Darrell Young from the Air Force Reserve, the commander of the 934th Airlift Wing. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase and hear how a local business and its motivated employees stepped in to help a military family with some home repairs. During a deployment, military spouses become accustomed to taking everything on themselves. Whether it's cooking, cleaning, fixing the car, or shoveling the snow, they're ready to do it all. Sometimes, however, they can forget to reach out for help. Kelly is on her second deployment. Her husband is deployed with the 1st Brigade Combat Team, and Kelly's hands are full with 2 children, work, and going to school. When both toilets in her house broke, Kelly set out to the Maple Grove Home Depot in true military spouse fashion to fix them herself. With the help of Home Depot employee Amy Hoffman, Kelly chose 2 toilets. Kelly, figuring the installation couldn't be that hard, asked Amy if she had any advice on how to install the toilets. Having experience replacing toilets herself, Amy knew that just carrying the toilets inside would be a challenge for Kelly. After Amy got approval from management, Home Depot sent Amy and another employee to deliver and install the new toilets. The job turned out to be a difficult one, however, so they even called in Home Depot's plumber to assist them. Home Depot also provided replacement parts. Thank you, Maple Grove Home Depot, for providing relief to a military family separated by deployment and going beyond the yellow ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is a comprehensive program that creates awareness, connecting service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. To learn how you can support service members and their families, click the Make a Difference button at beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, united to bring service members all the way home. Coming up next, we'll speak to retired Major Joe Gomer, one of the few remaining Tuskegee Airmen. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelido.
February is Black History Month, and I want to take a moment to honor our African-American veterans, those serving today and those who have served throughout history. African-Americans have played a significant role in U.S. military history over the past 300 years, despite adversity and limited opportunities. The 555th Parachute Infantry Regiment, known as the Triple Nickel, was a group of pioneers who became the first all-African-American parachute infantry test platoon, company, and battalion. Just as the Tuskegee Airmen opened the way for African-American pilots, the Triple Nickel opened the way for African-American paratroopers. As I mentioned earlier, February is Black History Month. The Tuskegee Airmen and the Triple Nickels are great examples of brave men who were trailblazers of their time, and we should honor and remember these men 365 days a year.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelido. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining us now is one of the original Tuskegee Airmen, retired Major Joe Gomer. A Tuskegee Airman, served in World War II, Korea, the Cold War, and a Cold War veteran. Major Gomer, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Oh, thank you. Good day.
Sir, can you tell us why did you decide to join the military, and when did you know you were interested in aviation?
Well, I, as a citizen who wanted to serve his country, I grew up with, let's put it this way, I was in an assimilated community, in other words, mostly white. And they were all volunteering, and I had been 1A for a year and a half, and I wanted to serve too. So instead of taking my welding card and going out to Kaiser Shipyard in Oakland, California, I decided to enlist. And you know how much America needed their manpower at that time. You've seen Uncle Sam there on a big poster pointing at you. Well, I didn't know how to go about it. So what I did was look at an atlas for something military near me, and up came Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. So I took a bus to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and enlisted.
And this was in 1942 at the age of 22, sir?
Fort Leavenworth, Kansas.
In 1942.
It was July 1942. And I hadn't noticed it or paid any attention to it, that I had a single bed and a great big dormitory. They taught me how to make a bed so you could bounce a coin on it and mop the floor till you could eat off of it. But after a few days, they came to me and they said, we're sorry, but we don't have anything for you now. You can stick around until we find something for you to do, or you can go home. So I went back to my hometown of Iowa Falls, Iowa. And fortunately, the War Department solved their problem by ordering me to report to Tuskegee, Alabama on the 18th of September, 1942. I had applied for aviation cadet training, and that was it.
So how did you feel when you arrived in Tuskegee?
Tuskegee.
Were you shocked to be going into training for aviation, sir?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Were you surprised to be going into aviation training?
Well, no, I was not surprised at all because I had applied for aviation cadet training. I had a pilot's license by that time, because Ellsworth College had gotten the civilian pilot training program, which was really a plum here at a small college, get the cadet program. And someone asked me if I was interested in learning how to fly. And I thought it over briefly, waited all the angles. I had no advisor or mentor. So I said, yes, I'll give it a try. So they took me out to the airport, and I saw my first airplane. It was a Taylor craft. I saw one 65 years later hanging from the Iowa Aviation Hall of Fame as they were inducting me into the Iowa Aviation Hall, and it looked like a big kite. But anyway, the second time I saw and touched my first real airplane, I was flying it. No big deal. So that started my aviation career. I got my pilot's license from that.
We're speaking with retired Major Joe Gomer, one of the original Tuskegee Airmen who served in World War II, Korea, and the Cold War, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Major, how long were you in Tuskegee, and how much training did you get?
I was in Tuskegee for 9 months, from September to May. I got my wings in May 28, 1943, and our training was exactly the same as the white aviation cadets, and it was excellent training. I think all the instructors were volunteers, but that was it. And I might point out that I'm just a representative of the Black Army Air Corps, and there are really 15 to 16,000, I would say, Tuskegee Airmen and women, because all of our training took place in this one local community, both civilians and military. So when you see a Tuskegee Airman, you're looking at the tip of the iceberg.
And, sir, when you were done with your training, then you were stationed in Salerno, Italy?
No, I had to go to for additional training. The 332nd Fighter Group was stationed at Selfridge, and I was in the 301st Fighter Squadron. And I have to tell you, after our graduation, the first thing we had to do was to transition into a combat aircraft. The only thing available was the the old P-40. And that's a single-seat aircraft. Well, we'd always had dual before. But the way it worked was that they gave you the book, and you sat in the cockpit, and they gave you blindfold cockpit check to see if you knew where all the entrances were, and then when it came your turn, you climbed in, they closed the canopy and said, it's all yours. We started up the aircraft for the first time. There's no practice taxiing or anything. And the last words I heard were, be sure to make S-turns when you taxi, because you won't be able to see over that long nose, which I did duly. Taxi out, stopped there. Set up at the in the runway, waited for the green light, and got the green light and shoved the throttle forward, and that was it. I'm off in my combat aircraft.
Sounds pretty exciting, sir.
Every single officer had to do the same thing. And, of course, they didn't want any larger aircraft, because that would have meant additional people they would have to train.
We're speaking with the retired Major Joe Gomer, one of the original Tuskegee Airmen. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk to him about the 68 missions that he flew during World War II. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We're speaking with retired Major Joe Gomer, one of the original Tuskegee Airmen and a veteran of World War II, Korea, and the Cold War. Major Gomer, can we pick up the conversation with World War II? And you actually flew 68 missions.
Yes, and I like to point out that the 332nd Fighter Group is probably the only fighter group to fly all of the single-engine fighters. We'd all transitioned into the P-40s. We went overseas as a P-39 outfit. We left Selfridge Field in December of 1943, and we got over to some of us flew out of Salerno, some flew out of Cappadocino and Naples, and I might point out that I had my first open cruise, ocean cruise, 29 days in a Liberty ship in a convoy, which traveled at the speed of the slowest ship, and we landed in down in Barrie, took a cold ride in a 6x up to our new bases, and started flying first to P-39, and that was convoy and convoy patrol, harbor and convoy patrol, and then they decided that they needed us more for long-range missions, escorting B-17s and B-24s. So we went from the 12th to the 15th Air Force, and we left Cappadocino and Salerno and went to Ramatelli. We were black from top to bottom, probably the first combat, black combat unit, and we even had our own airfields. And we flew, next we flew the P-47, flew that for about 6 weeks, and that was the heaviest bomber, heaviest fighter in the inventory. It weighed 7 tons, carried eight machine guns, 50 caliber. You could push a truck off the road with it. But the disadvantage was it burned so much fuel that we had a radius of about 350 miles. Then after 6 weeks of that, we got the P-51. And we then could, with our drop tanks, toward the end of the war, we could go all the way to Berlin. We got the second-hand aircraft. We knew what was happening as we transition. We got the handoff aircraft from the other fighter groups, and they got the new P-51s. But the P-51 was the aircraft which we're noted for most.
Major, I understand on one of your missions you lost your P-51 canopy.
Yes, that was one of our more interesting trips. We had a little rumble, and I keep this short. I lost my wingman. We split up, and I'm calling for my wingman, and not getting any answer. But down below me, I see a Lufbery with a red tail in the middle. So I'm going to go down and rescue somebody, I hoped. But in the process, my canopy came off, and I thought that I'd been hit, so I took evasive action when I cleared up. There wasn't another airplane in sight. So by then, I'm all by myself, but I have no canopy. My canopy took my goggles, and I'm at least 500 miles from home. So
you had an interesting ride home, didn't you?
I did get back, and I had wind-burned eyes. Of course, all I had was the front part of the cockpit, and they grounded me for a week or so with wind-burned eyes. Now, the interesting part there is my wingman was I got contacted later because my daughter was searching the internet looking for my name and found my name, but it was in another website. It was the son of the pilot that I lost, and I got his phone number, and I called me called him. So then he filled me in on what happened after that. Well, he said, I heard you calling me, but I was too busy to reply. I was flying formation with two ME-109s. I said, I better shoot them down before they shot me down. And he shot down a third one before he got shot down. He spent the rest of the war as a POW.
Major Gomer, I understand you flew 68 missions, and one thing that our listeners might not know that the Tuskegee Airmen escorted over 200 bombing missions, and you never lost an American bomber to an enemy fighter.
Well, now, I don't know how that story got started, and it sounds good, but you get a sky full of airplanes, you do lose a few. We probably lost less than other groups because our commander laid on the line. He said, your job is not to go out here and shoot down enemy fighters to get your name in the Stars and Stripes. If you shoot down one fighter, that's one airplane and one man. If they get through and shoot down a bomber, that's one plane and 10 men. So we weren't even allowed to leave the bombers to chase the enemy aircraft unless we were directed to do so. So we didn't have that reputation of flying close cover, but I'm sure that a bomber or two was lost.
But you protected most of them. You did a great job, didn't you?
That was our objective.
Sir, I understand you hosted a special showing of the new movie Red Tails up in Duluth recently. How did you like that?
Well, it was entertaining, and George Lucas did accomplish that. He wanted an entertaining movie. It did meet the mark, however, as to really probing the depths of what the situation was. They had nice, shiny airplanes, and the tents were all in nice, neat rows, and there wasn't enough mud. And it didn't emphasize the point that our crewmen had to maintain these different aircraft as they changed over without benefit of hangars or anything. Everything was outdoors. And I can't speak highly enough of my crew chief.
Major, I understand that after you retired from the military service, you began a 21-year-long career with the United States Forest Service, and you settled in Duluth. And they tell me that Duluth is...
It was an all-white male organization at the time, and my 22 years in the military prepared me for my 21 years with the U.S. Forest Service.
And, sir, I understand that the city of Duluth is in the process of preparing a bronze statue of you at Duluth's new airport terminal.
They seem to be working on that. Yeah, that's pretty nice.
A pretty nice thing. Major, we've just got about a minute left, and I know you've got some thoughts for today's young people who are thinking about being aviators, but how important do you think receiving a good education is to our young people that want to follow in your footsteps?
Education is the key, and we want them to aim high and believe in themselves. And the one thing that we really did accomplish with the World War II later was prove that given the opportunity, anyone can be anything they want to be. It's strictly up to the individual.
Major, I want to thank you for your service to our country. And do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
I think that we need to pay more attention to our veterans today. I think keeping in mind our service men and women are being sent out and representing about 1% of the population, and the other 99% don't appreciate what they're doing for us.
Major, I'd like to thank you for joining us on the Minnesota Military Radio, and I hope you get a chance to see that statue out at the airport and give it a little polish.
Well, thank you. They're trying to get it completed by my birthday.
Well, we hope they get it done, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was Major Joe Gomer, one of the original Tuskegee Airmen who served from World War II, Korea, and the Cold War, joining us today on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guest for joining us this week, Colonel Darrell Young, commander of the 934th Airlift Wing of the U.S. Air Force Reserve, and retired Major Joe Gomer, one of the original Tuskegee Airmen, Commissioner Larry Shelledo, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week for a roundtable discussion concerning employment opportunities for returning troops. That's next Sunday morning at 7 right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.